Welcome into another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shopdaw, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. And with me, as always, Tara Wellman. Tara Wellman on Twitter. Tara's been popular this week. You can find her also on Last Man Up podcast. Wasn't that right, Tara?
Correct.
Okay. You can check her out over there, and they talked to her, and it was very cool. Let's just dive right into it, and the fact that the Cardinals this afternoon optioned 6 players to the minor leagues, most of which we understood. Ryan Sheriff, Jack Flaherty, I mean, Oscar Mercado, we knew going into the year he was going to come down. Brake Valera, maybe a little surprising that he went down right now just because of the talk early on. And we'll get to those guys in a little bit, but the main key interesting one was that Carson Kelly was sent down to Memphis, which means he won't be starting the year as Yadier Molina's backup. Obviously, Kelly had had a struggles in the spring, but I don't know. I still found a little bit surprising that they went this route.
It's interesting. I think the perhaps least talked about, but most intriguing position battle for the Cardinals the last several years has been who's going to be that backup catcher. Mm-hmm. You know, really since it was Tony Cruz, there's not been a lot of consistency there. And there's always been this conversation, I would say especially since a lot of that turnover, that Yadier Molina's not getting any younger. So theoretically, you would start to see more of the backup catcher. However, when Yadier Molina trains for, what, like 175 games a year, mm-hmm. You're not going to see much of the backup catcher, which leaves you in a bit of a weird situation because at some point, Molina's not going to be the starting catcher for the St. Louis Cardinals. You know, when he comes to the end of his contract, which he has said this spring will be the end of his career, at least that's the plan for now, who's the guy going to be that comes up behind him? You know, Carson Kelly was sort of named the heir apparent because he showed a lot of potential, but I think there's been a concern all along that the timing of that for Carson Kelly is just not quite right because he may have been primed for more of a progressive turnover the last, I would say last season into this season, than Molina was ready for. And at this point, I feel like he's sort of dictating that story as much as anyone. So the backup catcher for the Cardinals is in a weird position as far as what that role is, what it means, because you'd like it to be the guy that's, in theory, going to gradually take over for Molina and then be there ready to fill in that spot every day once Molina's gone. But the guy that's in that spot right now isn't going to get a chance to play that much. So, you know, with Kelly this spring, he was not really wowing anyone, but he did have the experience. He sort of had the spot to lose. But he also has this weird situation where he needs to continue to develop. He needs to continue to just be consistent in the work that he puts in and the games that he plays in. And he's not going to get that at the major league level. So it's not necessarily the end of the world, I don't think. if you listened to that Last Man Up podcast, I said it there and I said it again on Twitter tonight. And as expected, it riled some people up. But I think that the history John Mozeliak has of maybe waiting a season too long to utilize the value of a player in a trade might be what we're looking at with Carson Kelly. And that doesn't mean that he can't still be traded at some point this year for a piece that the Cardinals need. I just don't think that the timing of his emergence as a major league ready catcher is going to play into the hands of the St. Louis Cardinals because of the time that Yadier Molina still has and the ability he still has to be that everyday guy.
Yeah, it is that difficult situation, not only because of Yadier Molina, but then the fact that you have Andrew Kisner coming up who is kind of following in Carson Kelly's footsteps. He's a guy that can catch and hit, and in a lot of organizations would probably be the AAA catcher this year, but you know he's probably going to start at AA for the Cardinals because of this backlog. Which opens that up for Kelly. You know, do you go ahead and trade him because he's not going to be playing much over the next 3 years while you've got a guy that in Kinsner that might be ready right about the time or at least yeah. not wasting away as much at the end of Molina's contract. You know, that being said, and I think that's all true, and it makes sense that Kelly needs to play all every day. That being said, you know, going in, that was not the case going into this winter or going into right. spring training. This was not a situation where the Cardinals said, hey, Carson Kelly's going to play at Memphis because he needs to play every day. There was ideas of trying to get him fresh and trying to do stuff and try to get him into games more. There wasn't this idea. And so since that idea didn't seem to be on the table when the spring came around, you start to wonder how much are they putting too much emphasis on what Carson Kelly did or didn't do this spring and what Francisco Pena might have done. It sounds to me, just reading article here from Joe Trezza especially, you know, they really weren't happy with Kelly's defense. And that's fair. And I can see that they want to go back to let him have some time in AAA. But I don't know. I don't know how much more Carson Kelly has to prove at AAA. Because if he had that much more to prove at AAA, why did the Cardinals call him up last, you know, go ahead and let Eric Fryer go and bring him up to sit on the bench in St. Louis last year? It feels like Carson Kelly's kind of getting jerked around a bit here. And again, I'm not arguing that they didn't make the right move sending him to Memphis now, but it just doesn't seem to track with all the other stuff that they've done with him.
Which, let's recap, they did with Colton Wong, mm-hmm. they did with Stephen Piscotty, they did with Randall Grichuk. I mean, this is not exactly a new scenario for a guy that at least at one point was talked about as becoming part of that Cardinals core. Who that Cardinals core is right now is a little bit of a mystery. You know, that came up in a conversation I had on the other podcast this week, and I think it's a really good point that, you know, a lot of these guys that are supposed to be the core of the team for the Cardinals are now playing for other teams. this isn't a new... It's not a new circumstance. It's not a new plan of attack. John Mozeliak seems very comfortable with the idea of major league talent playing at AAA for the sake of at-bats, for the sake of repetitions, for the sake of, quote, getting it right, whatever that happens to mean for that particular individual. And we've seen that be successful in some regard, but I also think that there's value in learning how to be a big leaguer. And once you have a position on that big league roster, you can't always just go back to the minor leagues to figure it out. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to figure it out on the fly and in the situation that you're playing in. So I don't know. I think it seems to be an organizational philosophy that the best opportunity to get it right is to go back and do that at Memphis, where perhaps the stakes aren't as high. But I don't know that that's really resulted in the kind of sustained major league success that they seem to think that it will for any one of the guys that has sort of been jerked around a little bit like they are now seemingly doing with Carson Kelly.
And I'm trying to pull this up and see if that was right, but I saw somebody point out on Twitter. Now it looks like there still should be one. Somebody pointed out on Twitter that Carson Kelly was out of options. It looks like he should still have one for next year as well. But again, you're right. It comes down to that point where they can't. It was kind of like with Randall Grichuk this year. You knew that he wasn't going to Memphis or Palm Beach or wherever he was going to be sent down in the middle of the year because he was out of options. And you know, if that's the way you get people fixed, at some point in time, you've got to figure out a different way because you can't do that their entire career. You can't send Colton Wong down for 10 straight years to spend 2 weeks at Memphis figuring out his swing. And so, I don't know. I'm kind of with you. I don't think the Cardinals want to give up on Carson Kelly just yet, but, you know, if Francisco Pena is just terrible, one, we'll never know because Yadier Molina plays every day. but, you know, if he isn't, if he gets so bad that they have to bring up Carson Kelly, or Carson Kelly hits 400 in Memphis and they have to call him up, it's going to be the same situation because there's not, they're not addressing the real problem, and the real problem is Yadier Molina plays every day.
Yeah.
And so until they can figure out a way to address that, they're probably better with a guy like Pena who really doesn't have a future. A guy like we saw with Tony Cruz, a guy that, you know, you just hope isn't going to be in there, but once a week, if that. Because, if, you know, if somebody gets hurt, then, I mean, if Yadi gets hurt, then Carson Kelly gets is on the next plane to St. Louis. I mean, he's going to, they're not going to have Francisco Pena be the starter for any length of time.
Right.
But still, I don't know. It's a situation to continue to watch, to monitor. And then the flip side of this move is they have to put Francisco Pena on the 40-man roster. The 40-man roster is full. And unlike in the past, and I talked to Kyle Reese a little bit about this for our conversation, the Conversation of 670 on Saturday, unlike in the past, there's not an obvious weak link to the 40-man roster, a guy that you say, okay, if we got to get rid of somebody, that's your guy. You know, until this spring, it was probably Mike Myers, at least for me. But, you know, Myers has obviously figured some stuff out and has a chance to make the team, much less not, you know, stay on the 40-man. I mean, what do the Cardinals do here? I mean, they've got to do something, but I mean, pretty much anybody that they put out there on waivers is probably gone.
Right.
They're not going to be able to keep them. So unless they make some sort of trade here in the next week, they're going to just lose a player for Francisco Pena.
It would not be the first time that the Cardinals' backup catcher job became a point of contention as far as the 40-man roster was concerned. They've tried the grizzled veteran thing in the past. Hasn't always worked out well for them. But you're right. I think the pitching puzzle for this team is what's going to end up, as it typically does, being sort of that last piece determined. And you're looking at the 40-man roster with a lot of those pitching decisions as, you know, these are the guys that need to be just a phone call away if something happens at the major league level. So you hate to, you know, let go of a Ryan Sheriff who had some success last year but hasn't maybe sustained it. Or, you know, somebody that, you know, Connor Green, a new face that came in and made some strides this spring. All of these pieces that, you know, last week you talked about Josh Lucas, who had a really strong spring. These are all guys that have made a case for their spot on the opening day roster, much less the 40-man roster. And, you know, then you've got Bud Norris. So all of that comes down to Bud Norris, but he's obviously going to make the team and he's obviously going to have a role, and we'll see how much like the Ty Wigginton deal that ends up being. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's such a this is one of those things that I'm really glad I'm not in a front office to decide, because I would question every move 3 or 4 or 7 or 8 or 9 times and then end up with a roster that I still wasn't sure was the best thing going forward. That's just the side effect of an overly analytical mindset. But these guys do it all the time, and they're going to have to make some of those tough decisions, because, you know, if Carson Kelly isn't going to be your guy, then it changes more than just Carson Kelly not being your guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I wouldn't be too surprised to see Jumbo Zalock ship off an arm for maybe some sort of prospect that's, you know, not going to need to be on the 40-man yet, or do some sort of 2-for-1 deal or something like that. But that being said, you know, right now the Cardinal team doesn't have that glaring hole. I mean, there are places that maybe you could upgrade here and there, but nothing that just has to be fixed. And so as much as some people would like Chris Archer,
Who might you be talking about?
Nobody I know, but you know,
that person sounds really smart, though.
you know, they like what they've got, and I, you know, not saying that they're necessarily right, or if Chris Harper fell in their lap, they wouldn't take him, but they're not going to be actively going after that with a rotation that has looked pretty solid right now. I mean, you look at what things have gone. You know, Michaelis has pitched two good games. Adam Wainwright has an ERA of like under one for the spring. Weaver and Walker have looked sharp. I mean, it is spring training. It is the Florida League. It is small sample sizes and all that. But I think what I've, at least on some of those guys, maybe not so much on Adam Wainwright, but on some of those guys, I think what has stood out to me, and especially on the relievers, is the number of strikeouts. And I don't, that's not, you know, you can't blame that on the park, and you can't blame that on other thing. I mean, you can blame it on inexperienced batters they might be facing, but still, there's been a lot of strikeouts by this pitching staff, and I think that bodes pretty well for the season.
I think that bodes pretty well for how quickly Mike Maddux is making an influence. You know, but there's been a long time pitching approach for the St. Louis Cardinals that was really created, established, done well in the Dave Duncan era, that perhaps Lilloquist tried to continue on. I don't know if it was ever as successful as what Dave Duncan was able to do. But even with some of these guys, I think particularly the likes of an Adam Wainwright, to have someone come in that has a different approach, that has a different perspective, that has maybe a little bit of a different game plan, is probably a really good thing when you're trying to reinvent yourself in order to stay relevant in a rotation that's full of young guys. So, and then on the flip side, for those young guys to have a different voice, to have a new challenge, and just a new set of eyes to sort of see where they go wrong sometimes, and then to come at that from a different perspective, I think it's going to be really fascinating to watch this pitching staff become the St. Louis Cardinals pitching staff under Mike Maddux. And really see how that changes. I think you're seeing a difference in the way that they approach hitters. And that's not, that shouldn't be a surprise. But I think for someone like Adam Wainwright that we feel like we know and we sort of know who he is and what he's going to do and how he's going to attack, to see a change of pace, to see a little bit of a different plan is really fascinating. And it seems to be working well for him this year. Now, there's always the caveat with Adam Wainwright that he says he's finally healthy, but he's also said that the last 4 years in a row. So his health notwithstanding, he's had a great spring. And I think it's been everything we could have hoped for from Adam Wainwright coming into the year. And I'm as quick as we are to call out someone like John Mabry when the hitters aren't great, I would like to, at this point, say that I'm comfortable giving Mike Maddux a little bit of the credit there in what we've seen out of the pitching staff once they got past that initial couple of rough first outings that you tend to see in the spring anyway.
Yeah, I mean, there's a focal point of Michaelis. You know, his first two outings were terrible, and then there was a fairly well-reported, you know, meeting with Maddux who, you know, kind of told him, you know, look, you've got good stuff and here I use it. And ever since then, he hasn't allowed a run. If he does that the rest of the year, it's pretty good. but, you know, and I think that's where it's going to be a fascinating thing for me. I know my post tomorrow, besides having a whole bunch of self-promoting links, is the roundtable question that I asked and you participated in. And one of the questions I asked in that was, you know, what's the topic we're going to talk about all year? And I think, for me, one of the topics is going to be, how much credit do we give Mike Maddux for pitching decisions this year versus Mike Matheny? Because I think all of us are kind of already in this mindset that if something goes right, Mike Maddux did it. If something goes wrong, Mike Matheny didn't listen to Mike Maddux, and then it blew up in his face.
Comfortable with that.
You know, and, you know, who knows? 9 times out of 10, that may be true. But I feel like, you know, I feel like they're going to be on the same page more often than we not, or at least go along with each other one way or the other.
Yeah.
But I think that's going to be something that we're going to really look at, because in some degree Mike Maddox has this reputation coming in from another organization, or from a number of other organizations, but already having this reputation as a very strong pitching coach, and this idea that they're giving him more leeway as pitching coordinator type thing. I think that's going to be very interesting. And so far, like you said, so far it seems like he is really clicking with some people and getting a lot of good stuff out of them. And I know he's not entirely the reason, but I mean, you look at Mike Myers, you look at Josh Lucas, you look at even Tui Lavalla, who is not pitching nearly as much as I would have expected for a guy that's got to make the team, but he did pitch today. Worked out pretty well. You look at those kind of guys, and you look at the impact that you got to figure some of that impact is Mike Maddox and the different approach. And so that's going to be really fascinating to watch this year. If you were to pick a pitcher from this spring that has surprised you the most, then let's take out Myers, because I think that's fairly obvious for a guy that, you know, gave up, what, 100 runs in his first outing. To actually be relevant is pretty interesting. But if it was besides him, who's the one that surprised you the most?
To be fair, I haven't seen a whole lot of these spring training games because, you know, they happen in the middle of the day when people actually have to work. which, you know, they should really do something about that if they want that. It's still baseball, and it's still good to watch when you get a chance, which just doesn't happen very often. But no, I think, I don't know, on the more negative side of things, I think not really getting a chance to get a feel for who Luke Gregersen is. I'm not particularly high on him anyway, but not really getting a chance to see him at his best thus far, I think is probably on the negative side of things. As far as the surprise factor, I think Josh Lucas being the factor that he is at all is a little bit surprising to me, just because, that wasn't even on the radar for me. So seeing him come in and just sort of quietly have a really solid spring, and while it's always a small sample size, he has more innings than a lot of guys that we've said a lot more about. So he's got that going for him. And I don't know where he could fit into the picture as far as the pitchers for the Cardinals on the opening day roster, but he definitely provides a little bit of a boost if you're looking at, you know, who the Cardinals can utilize in that bullpen in perhaps a little bit more of a deep situation than we really expected coming into the year.
Yeah, you look at today's box score because it was pretty much a bullpen game today, and we'll kind of get into that here in a minute. But, yeah, Josh Lucas pitches a scoreless inning. Brett Cecil throws a scoreless inning. Tui as well. Bud Norris with one, and then Luke Gregersen with one. I mean, if you get that kind of production throughout the year, and right now, I feel pretty confident in just about all the bullpen arms. I mean, I know there's we don't really know what we got with Gregersen. This is only his second inning, I think, of work this spring. And Bud Norris is, okay. But, you know, he's got that old veteran look. He's not a new car smell type of guy. But, you know, he had the one bad outing when he was a start. But ever since he's been in the bullpen, he's been fine. Yeah. I just, you know, I like this idea. I mean, we don't have a Jonathan Broxton. We don't have a guy struggling. Now, things can change once the season starts. But right now, I think we're to the point where when they go to the bullpen, we're going to be fine with whatever decision they make.
And I think it's a really interesting mix, whichever guys end up in the bullpen for opening day, because you do have, I guess they're still calling Gregersen the closer for whatever reason. But we even talked about this a little bit right after that was that deal was done, that, you know, if Gregerson is your closer, meaning he's going to pitch the ninth inning every time, then that frees up someone like Leon to be the guy that you go to in the most important inning of the game, wherever that might happen. So I think they have a really interesting mix of guys that can be used in different situations that might keep Matt Bowman from pitching in every single game of the year, just because they do seem to have more realistic options. And I say that because you brought up Broxton. It seems like there has almost always been one guy in the bullpen that's there because he has to be, not because he's actually going to be good. Mm. So you're really limiting your options even more when you have a guy that's only the closer, you have a guy that's only the long man, you have a guy that's not going to pitch unless you're down by nine, and then you have some young guys that you don't really know what they have to offer. So this year, it seems like there are more options that are realistic as far as contributing consistently at the major league level. And of course it's spring and you never really know who's going to be hurt or who's going to, you know, go out there throwing 100 miles an hour one day and then not be able to pick up a baseball the next. It's just the nature of what they're trying to do. But you're right. I'm surprised that I'm saying this because I have been not secretly pretty down on the Cardinals pitching staff coming into this year, primarily because they don't have Chris Archer.
That's right.
Yeah, that was me. Yeah. It was me. I told you, really smart, really smart perspective there from that person. No, but their bullpen seemed to be a bit of a disaster coming into the spring. And there are some guys who have really stepped up, and Gregerson seems to still be a little bit of a question mark just because we haven't seen enough of him, but there are other options should he not be one that the Cardinals can go to right away. And then the starting staff has really started to come around as well. So you're right. I'm surprised that I'm saying it, but I like the options that they have, even down to three, four guys that would be called up if necessary, you know, once you get past those guys that make the 25-man roster.
Yeah, we have complained numerous times about the fact that Mike Matheny has to carry 13 pitchers with the idea that, yeah, there's that long man that never gets used, or there's a guy that you really don't want to. So he may have eight relievers down there, but he's only using five or maybe six of them. Right. You know, why do you have those extra ones? In fact, you know, Blogger Day last year, you know, Mo said, hey, we would prefer 13 hitters, but, the manager wants 13 pitchers, and we're going to give him the tools he wants, which I thought was interesting. But this year, it feels like, I mean, if you had to cut, you know, if you only had seven relievers, I mean, you're really kind of battling. You've got four or five of these guys battling for that one spot. Even though there's probably going to be a lot of rotation, you're right. It just feels like you can actually use eight relievers in any situation, especially with the strikeout numbers that we're seeing. You've got, three, four guys down there that could close a game regularly, not even one of these, you know, Gregerson's pitched 3 days
if he
in a
had
row.
To.
Right, but, you know, just a weird flux or the 12th inning or something like that. But, I mean, Lyons, Gregerson, Norris, and Leon are four very good options, and Tui has done it enough in the minor leagues that if they ever trust him to, might be able to, especially the way he's pitched this spring, could be in that mix as well. I mean, when you've got five guys that could close a game, and then you spread them out throughout things, your starters don't have to go very far, and that's probably a good thing given some of the issues with the starting staff and, you know, going deep into games. But that kind of shores it up. It's very interesting to see. So as we get here, basically 10 days from opening day, we've talked a little bit about the pitching staff. Let's talk about the team as a whole. How are you? Are you feeling better about them than you did when the spring training started?
I think that what we've seen from Matt Carpenter this week is very encouraging as far as solidifying what the team looks like on opening day. I think seeing a little bit more aggressiveness on the base paths that has resulted in successful base running is an encouraging sign. I think that I don't know that there's anyone of the regulars this spring that has really just wowed me. But I don't feel like there's anyone that I'm extraordinarily worried about coming out of the spring. I think Carlos Martinez has had a little bit of a rough go, sort of dialing it in. And we have seen a little bit of that from him in the past, even, you know, just that sort of getting it going in the first inning of a game. He got a little extra work in today to try to work that specifically. But, you know, I don't know that I'm really high on the potential for this team, but I'm certainly not as concerned about it as I was perhaps when spring training started, just because I feel like they seem to be in a better place than they were at this time last year. And that's weird because they had a pretty strong spring last year, but it still felt a little bit disjointed in a lot of respects. I think there's still enough excitement, and maybe this is just a little bit inside baseball that isn't really going to matter, but I'm excited about seeing what Maddux does to change the way that the pitching staff is handled during games. I'm excited to see how having Jose Oquendo back is going to make a difference in the way that the Cardinals play defensively on the infield in particular. And it's strange to maybe be more excited about the impact of the coaching staff than the team itself, but those things seem to be translating to just more consistent baseball this spring. And I think things are starting to come together in a way that maybe they haven't the last couple of years out of the spring. And there doesn't seem to be quite as much dramatic, you know, personnel lack of communication, with the exception of Carson Kelly. I think everything else has been pretty much as expected. The surprises have been good surprises. And I guess I'm just trying to, in more words than just, yeah, it's fine, say that while I'm not, you know, I'm not overly impressed because it is still just spring training. It's hard to take too much from it. I think it's been good, and I think they're in a good place.
Yeah, I tend to err on the side of optimism a lot of times anyway. And so, you know, I thought some people were underselling this team a bit when they went to spring. And again, I'm not saying this team is going to go out and win the division, although I think they could be more in the hunt than some others do. And I'm not saying they're going to win the World Series or anything like that. But I think this has got a very good chance of winning many more ballgames. I don't want to say many, but more ballgames than they lose. And I'm not talking, this is not, I don't feel like this is an 83-win team. I'm not even, I feel like it's probably even better than an 86-win team. I think we're back into that 90-win area. And again, I mean, you're right, it's spring, and we could be all excited and then go 3-9 again, and it would not be happy. But, you know, when you look at what this team has and what it has in Memphis and what it can, you know, what kind of injuries it can handle if necessary, and the fact that, you know, you got Alex Reyes in that mix and all that kind of stuff, it does feel like it's a team that could be challenging 90 wins, and that's good. I mean, that's something better than we've seen over the last couple of years, and that would be very helpful. Before we wrap it up, Cardinals play the Mets, I think it's three times this week before playing them on opening day, that first series. And so the Cardinals seem to be hiding their pitchers a bit. Not letting Wainwright and Martinez and others start against the Mets here in the spring so that the Mets don't feel comfortable against them opening day. Is that going a little too far? Is it the fact that every game counts? You've got to do this kind of thing? Because it feels a little bit of overkill.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It seems a little bit dramatic to me, because it's still going to be the first week of the season for everybody. I don't know. But I guess to some degree, what we talked about already is that these pitchers are coming after guys with a different approach this year, likely courtesy of their new pitching coach. And maybe they want to keep that a little bit more of a surprise than it would be if they were seeing them the week before they play them in a game that matters. I don't know. It's like I said, seems a little bit like overkill to me, but at the same time, they're not paying me to make those decisions. So I'm going to leave that to the guys who are actually in charge of the pitchers and hope that that's a sneaky Mike Maddux gamesmanship move. And then, you know, I'm sure once it happens in season, I'll be much more supportive of all of those little games that are played off the actual field.
I will say, I think one of the things that we have said at least at times over the last couple of years is that there's not a sense of urgency, and not a something that, you know, they're really trying to go all out and win. That's obviously what they're doing. I mean, they're obviously at least considering that. So, I mean, give them credit for that, I guess, as well. And not just saying, well, you know, it doesn't matter. They're good enough and, you know, all that kind of thing.
And look, I mean, the Mets starting rotation is not really something to just brush off. So, you know, if you're going to go into that opening series wanting it to be better than a 3-9 start to the year, if it takes something that seems a little dramatic for spring training to get yourself in that competitive mindset and to realize that this Mets team is no joke, and it's going to take a really good start from everyone up and down that lineup, including those starting pitchers, to get off on the right foot, then, you know, go for it. If it helps with preparing yourself for that competitive mentality to start the year against a rotation that many would put up against any other of the best rotations of baseball, then so be it.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, you gotta take it where you get it. So, alrighty. Well, we've done our part for this week. Again, next week, Tara and I will be with you for the last spring training version of this show, at least for this year. And so, until then, for Tara, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.